Sessions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. I'm Bonnie Bright, and I'm your host for this series, and I received my PhD from Pacifica in the Depth Psychology program there. And some of you who have been following this series already know that it's dedicated to helping extend depth psychology in the world by introducing you to some of the individuals who are contributing in profound ways to the fields of Jungian and depth psychologies. And my guest today is Matthew Bennett, who is a licensed clinical psychologist, lecturer, and administrator. Matthew, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks, Bonnie. Good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I'm going to go ahead and just share your bio with everybody so that they know a little bit more about you, and then we're going to launch into what I think will be a really interesting conversation about getting depth psychology out into the world and ways that that can happen, and also a really exciting take, I think, on your experience with the Peace Corps. And just a reminder that Matthew will be presenting a workshop at Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara on July 16th and 17th, and that workshop is called Artifice of Eternity, Aging and Long-Term Care. Matthew Bennett, PsyD, is a licensed clinical psychologist, lecturer, and administrator with experience in public sector mental health and substance abuse treatment. He has broad experience in program development, and he was formerly the founder and first director of training for the Ventura County Behavioral Health Pre-Doctoral Internship in Clinical Psychology and chair-elect of the Psychology Department at Ventura County Medical Center in Ventura, California. And Matthew's research interests include personality disorders, comparative personality theory, and internet applications for mental health. Dr. Bennett is also a returned Peace Corps volunteer. And I'm going to let you say a little bit more about that, Matthew. But first of all, I just wanted to say you have a really broad clinical background. And, of course, you teach in the counseling program at Pacifica. I wondered if you'd share a little bit about what called you to be a psychologist and counselor.
Yes, well, counseling is an applied healing art. It's a professional discipline that does everything from help us to address the suffering brought on by mental illness to helping people to enrich their lives and to kind of activate their own potential and to live more fully, to develop a broader range of adaptive capacities to life and have richer, fuller, more meaningful lives. And counselors work in a really broad range of settings, from agencies to private practice. And I've done a little bit of all that, and I feel called to be a healer. I think therapy is a verb. It's about helping, and that's what my instinct was.
I really like that therapy is considered a verb. I think that many of us have different ways of healing or helping ourselves that we would refer to as being therapeutic. But, of course, counseling or psychotherapy, as we know it, does tend to be one of the first things that comes to mind. I think part of what's really interesting to me about counseling and psychotherapy probably goes without saying, given my background in depth psychology, but that is the idea of being able to bring a depth psychological orientation to whatever counseling or therapy that it is that you're offering. Can you say more about the importance of depth psychology to you in your particular practice, both private clinical practice, private counseling practice, and your teachings?
Well, sure. I think that word depth is a really key word because it suggests that psychotherapists and counselors who have a depth orientation are kind of prepared for a really broad spectrum slice of the human experience, and that includes being able to be emotionally present in difficult, emotionally powerful situations. It means being able to tolerate strong emotional states, and sometimes really psychotherapy just kind of boils down to that. Sometimes the therapist is modeling the capacity to just tolerate what they're experiencing. And depth psychology has such a rich tradition of grounded in a humanities background, what it means to be human and how having a fuller and broader experience of human life is a resource brought to bear to the challenge of life. And so there's all kinds of things that a depth training brings to the task of psychotherapy, like being able to identify with a lot of different kinds of people, being able to accommodate different points of view. And also, I think, just by dint of being a student of the human mind and the human experience, through access to mythology and literature, in addition to the things that clients say in a consulting room. It has a way of broadening us out.
Yes, it's interesting you say it has a way of broadening out when, in fact, it is called depth psychology. And I've been a part myself of many conversations about whether depth actually means going down. I like the broadening, and I'm really anxious to get into your experience with Peace Corps and how that relates to all of this. But you mentioned mythology. If you can say more about the roles of mythology and dream work and other ways that we have of understanding the unconscious and how that plays in. A lot of people that are listening to this, obviously, most people probably know that Carl Jung was one of the pioneers of depth psychology, along with Sigmund Freud and Eugene Boyler and many others. But I think that we associate Jung's methods a lot with depth psychology. And so mythology and dream work and these kinds of things obviously come into play here. How does that relate to the work that you do as a psychologist?
Well, that's an interesting point, this kind of access and this complex relationship between what we call depth and what we call breadth. I think in one way, just thinking about it, depth allows breadth. Because a depth preparation, any of the approaches that include an emphasis on depth psychology creates kind of like an anchor, like a deep foundational level. And in fact, Jung himself spoke of his work and working with the human mind in kind of archaeological terms, like deeper, older civilizations buried underneath more recent levels of civilization. And that does suggest a kind of depth that implies kind of going towards the center. And that's where mythology is, because mythology and storytelling and dreams, even just reading a good novel, you know, reading fiction, anywhere from Stephen King to Tolkien, that kind of fictional content, that kind of dream content, that kind of mythological content goes deep because it directly expresses some kind of fundamental frequencies and dynamics of what it means to be human and sometimes how hard it is to be human. And fiction and dream work and mythology, in a way, they're kind of like a really broad carrier signal. They can contain a lot of energetics. They're useful in reconciling opposing points of view and having more dimensionality in thought and behavior. And I think that's how depth becomes breadth, because being able to countenance the deeper aspects of life, the thonic layers of life, what Freud called the primary process, the closer you get to archetype, the more dynamic things are, the more irrational things are, the more powerful things are, to the point that Jung himself advocated and warned against identifying with your archetype, getting so close to it that you just kind of get consumed by it. That suggests to me the need to operationalize depth, to go to the depths and experience those things directly through dreams, through mythologies, through travel, through personal experience, but then to turn it into action, to operationalize it into behavior, to come out of that experience back in the world. You know, in the old Zen stories that were always about a pilgrim student of Zen Buddhism traveling off into the wilderness and kind of going on a lonely pilgrimage into the wilderness seeking enlightenment. Those stories always ended with the pilgrim back bare of breast in the market buying vegetables. And to me, that suggests closing the circle and being back in the world. And that's one of the reasons that actually I joined the Peace Corps, was to find a new way of being in the world. And I think the kinds of capacities that depth psychology encourages and fosters allows us to be in the world more fully and more vibrantly and more flexibly.
That's beautiful, that image of the pilgrim coming back to the marketplace and buying vegetables. It does bring it full circle for me, and it gives, of course, the impression of something that most of us associate with Jung's work, and that is the idea of wholeness, of becoming whole, of being able to embrace and accept and explore and understand the parts of ourselves that have been split off and that we have not typically managed to embrace consciously. And of course, his main concept of individuation often comes back to this whole idea of especially talk therapy, and the idea that we can, by exploring with a therapist a lot of these different kinds of aspects of ourselves through stories, through dreams, et cetera. But there's a quote from him that I was thinking about just this morning. It's where he talks about how it's really important to get out into the world. And you alluded to that, and so we can go there next. But I wanted to just put it out there, and then maybe we can use that as a launching point. This was in his Collected Work 7 in 2 Essays on Analytical Psychology. He says, "Anyone who wants to know the human mind will learn next to nothing from experimental psychology. He would be better advised to put away his scholar's gown, bid farewell to his study, and wander with human heart through the world. There, in the horrors of prisons, lunatic asylums and hospitals, in drab suburban pubs, in brothels and gambling hells, in the salons of the elegant, the stock exchanges, socialist meetings, churches, revivalist gatherings, and ecstatic sects, through love and hate, through the experience of passion in every form in his own body, he would reap richer stores of knowledge than textbooks a foot thick could give him, and he will know how to doctor the sick with real knowledge of the human soul. So that's a quote that I've always loved because it gives such a visual image of going out into the world and finding the kinds of information and experiences and emotions that will enable each one of us not only to do our own work, but also to help other people. And I have to imagine that when you decided to join the Peace Corps, maybe none of this was on your radar. You probably were not consciously doing it for any of these kinds of reasons that we talked about, but I bet that some of that came out of there. Can you tell us the story about how you decided to join the Peace Corps and a little bit about where you went and what happened?
Yeah, well, I very much agree with the way Jung put that. And I'm also reminded of the words of Terence, the Roman slave who became a playwright, who famously said that I am human. I count nothing human as alien to me. And I think that's consistent with Jung's idea of how reality is ultimately grounded in human experience. Or T.S. Eliot, who, in talking about the idea of magical formula and magical runes, said that runes and magic are a practical formula for getting specific results, like getting a cow out of a bog. When I first read that, it disappointed me because I preferred to have a, you know, more kind of romantic, abstracted idea of what magic is. But the more experience I get, you know, the more years I've worked in hospitals, the more time I've spent in county agencies working with the mentally ill, the more I see that all this work is really about helping people to be in this world, not to transcend out of it, but to be in this world. And that was the instinct that got me into the Peace Corps. I remember how I got into it. It's kind of a funny story, I think. I was a senior at Georgia State University in Atlanta, where I was going to college at the time. And I saw that there were recruitment posters on the walls in the hallways saying Peace Corps recruiters are here. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not really going to join the Peace Corps, but I'll go to this information meeting. And so I went to the information meeting, and I thought, I'm not really going to join the Peace Corps, but I'll fill out the application. And then I thought, well, I'm not really going to join the Peace Corps, but I'll go ahead and do the medical exams. And before you know it, there I was in staging. We had a three-month staging in Miami, and then a few weeks of in-country staging in Warsaw, since I served in Poland. So that was my kind of elliptical approach towards it. Like many big things with life, it wasn't something I just decided to do all at once, but it just kind of grew out of me. And I think I was a little intimidated, as maybe some of your listeners who have thought about or are thinking about joining the Peace Corps, it seems like such a big deal, and it is, but it's also something that's very doable. It's something that any of us can do. And again, it's a way of being in the world more richly. And my particular way of approaching it through these little steps, and that helped me to kind of overcome what seemed to be the enormity of leaving my country and my culture and my language and going away to some other country for what was supposed to be 2 years ended up 3 years. So speaking of Tolkien, it was almost like the hobbits walking out their door for the first time and their walkway being connected to a broader highway which leads you to the whole world, and you never know where you're going to get swept off to when you take that first step, which is also true of any study of depth psychology.
Absolutely true. You know, when I think about the Peace Corps, and I don't know a lot about it myself, but I have this image of it in my mind of what it might be and what it might entail. But I do know that they have a commitment to strengthen particularly Americans' understanding of the world and its people. This is one of the tenets that they are committed to. I'm wondering if you can comment on how you think Americans' understanding of the world and its people. I guess I'm asking you to comment on where we sort of are in that process today. Do you feel like we're too narrow or too shallow in our perspective? Or, I mean, is there room for growth? Are we expanding? Here we are in the year 2016 as this interview is taking place. And there's a lot of stuff going on out there, particularly I'm thinking about the political commentary and the political race that's been going on. Can you talk a little bit about how you believe how we are or are not maybe able to broaden our horizons and expand our perspective to include other ways than just our own?
Yeah, the American culture is a powerful solvent. It's really easy to dissolve in it, and I think that's what a lot of us do. It's a big culture. It's a big country with big oceans on a couple sides and long, peaceful borders with peaceful neighbors on the other side. And we've always been kind of blessed with having a lot of resources and a lot of intellectual vibrancy. And also, we have the luxury of being far away from, you know, the storm and drang that occupies other parts of the world with such intensity. And so it's easy for Americans to just kind of float through our culture and be suspended in it. And I think that's what many of us do. And culture is a prism through which we view all of reality. I think reality itself is culturally determined. You know, we use the phrase in anthropology and sociology, consensual reality, because to recognize the fact that we arrive at reality by consensus, consensual reality. Reality is determined by consensus, by the culture and the people in it. And so we all kind of collectively decide what is real. And the more people decide and agree what's real, the more powerful that idea becomes. And multiply that by all the factors of America with its size and its power and its wealth. The fact that its culture is not only a powerful solvent for us to dissolve in, but also it's in demand to a greater extent, has been in demand historically for a long time. Throughout that period of time, we could call the Pax Americana. You know, American culture is something that everyone thinks they know in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so from our point of view, I think it's all the more important for us to step out of the envelope and get out there in the world, all the better for an extended period of time. And one of the things that a Peace Corps experience or a similar experience does is to, in some ways, just kind of put you out there without the trappings of your culture in a new country with a new language. Peace Corps volunteers are discouraged from returning home during time of their service, partly because one of the values is to really kind of steep in the host culture and to get to know it. And I would also recognize that this used to be part of a great liberal arts education in the European tradition. You know, young men and women of means would travel the world for a year or a few years as just part of their broader education. I think there's something to that. I know a lot of Americans have the experience of viewing the world through participation in the military, which is another way of viewing the world, but it's, of course, a different kind of experience. And the Peace Corps affords us the chance to be, to some extent, nested in the host culture in a way that allows us to turn around and look at our own culture from afar. I think that's very healthy. I think that's very valuable. I think more people need to do it. And it was always a truism in the Peace Corps that it's a harder cultural adjustment to come back than it is to leave. And I found that to be true.
Yeah.
And I think that just illustrates and underlines, again, how hypnotizing and seductive and what a powerful solvent our culture is, that when you feel its effects receding, you realize what a profound effect it had on you all along, and you didn't even know it.
Yes. Oh, there's so much in what you said there that's really interesting. What I noted right away was what you were talking about as America being a powerful solvent and how we kind of dissolve into that culture. It's because we don't really, as a general rule, know anything different. And as you pointed out, it's so easy for us to be in that culture that we just don't even question it. And so what I really perceive is that once you have the opportunity to step outside of that truly and look back and begin to understand this kind of bubble almost that you've been in, that suddenly things begin to make more sense. And of course, there's no way once you learn something, you know, that saying you can't go back home again. Once you learn something, you can't ever unlearn that. Once you've had that new perspective from across the bridge, as you sort of alluded to, you can't unknow that. And so I think that there's tremendous value. And I've noticed this from my own travels, and I've had some opportunities to be in foreign cultures, and I just realize in some ways it actually distances me from people who have not been able to have those opportunities. But therein also lies so much potential for me personally to be able to provide that perspective or bring it back into certain situations where maybe that perspective could really be helpful. Particularly, again, what occurs to me is when you talked about us being dissolved in the culture, what came to mind was the idea of being possessed by a complex or an archetype. Sometimes, and we started this conversation out with that, you know, a few minutes ago. Really, if you don't know that you're possessed by an idea or a belief or a value of some sort, or if it's all you've ever known, then it's really hard to get out from under it. Something has to happen to separate us from that.
Yes. Yes. That's especially relevant and crucial when doing counseling or therapy with the culturally different. And the more experience you've had of realizing that you've been suspended in a bubble all your life, that's encouraged you to think this way or that way. And here before you is someone who hasn't had that, even though they may be your fellow American. They're, by dint of having a different kind of human experience within that American envelope, their point of view and their posture and their experience of things as basic as, you know, truth and justice and meaning, the meaning of life and the roles of men and women and whether there's a truth or not and what the role of truth is in life, all those things spring into sharp relief as things that are really affected by our cultural lenses. And the more experience you've had of stepping outside that and looking at it from a different point of view, I think the more you're going to be able to take those differences in stride when trying to help people who are culturally different.
Yeah. Matthew, when you decided to become a psychologist, was that before or after you had your Peace Corps experience?
Well, I knew I wanted to be a psychologist. I knew I wanted to be a psychotherapist. By that time, I was one of these people who decided, you know, they say that a foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. I was one of those people that decided really early what I wanted to do. And although my Peace Corps experience and a couple other things made me think about other things to do with my life, I had majored in psychology and knew that I wanted to come back and go to graduate school. And it seemed just like a nice thing to do between college and graduate school, which is what I did. Basically, as soon as I came back after getting over the culture shock, again, of being back in the U.S., I pretty much resumed with graduate school again. And I found it to be enormously helpful. And I remember going around and interviewing for graduate school programs, and I just kept talking about the Peace Corps over and over and over again because people were interested in it. But, yeah, I had some idea of what I wanted to do. I did briefly consider becoming a diplomat. I couldn't help but think about that because when I was in the Peace Corps, I was kind of attracted by that world. You know, that didn't end up going anywhere, but I'm glad I had that experience, and I value all my experiences, including that one. It's one of the best things I ever did, I think.
Yeah, it's great to hear that story because I think that all of us sort of look at paths not taken and what may have been, and yet becoming a psychologist clearly has given you access to a lot of different fields that you may not have had access to otherwise, and also to continue to come into contact, I'm sure, with clients, patients, individuals, and even communities that have very different perspectives and points of view than you do. Do you find that in your work as a psychologist that you are able to influence and or help people to find ways to break from that sort of cultural immersion that we were talking about, or even their, you know, that's even ego stuff. We all are so identified with our own ego for the most part that we don't think to question it. So do you find that you have the opportunity, I guess, from the things that you learned in the Peace Corps, and I'm sure elsewhere in your own training as a psychologist, to bring that back home with your clients?
Sure. Well, I guess I don't look at culture necessarily as something that can be or even should be transcended. I think the cultural lens, like any other of our lenses, in a way, culture is like personality organization. I'm particularly interested in personality organization and character structure. So personalities that we could describe as narcissistic or depressive or schizoid or histrionic or paranoid, in a way, it's like they're all their own little culture. Those points of view represent, at the core, there's this sense of self that goes with it, like who am I in relationship to the world. And it also carries some freight about how the world works, and whether the world is safe or not, and what my posture should be, whether I should kind of come out swinging and defend myself and look out for number one, or whether I see myself as relatively powerless and I have to kind of ingratiate myself and adapt myself to the powers that be. I see some parallels between the kind of character structure that I've made a study of and the dictates of culture, and I don't think we transcend any of those or ever get free of them. And part of that, I think it's also important to say that for people who are culturally disadvantaged, you know, it's important not just to try to transcend that either, because sometimes cultural information carries important, almost like survival data for people who have been repressed. You know, it's not a useful point of view, I think, to, for example, counsel a person from a minority culture to somehow let go of or transcend the point of view they have culturally, because that point of view, to some extent, it's a survival mechanism. But I think all these things point to the same direction, which is that all the cultural lenses and the personality lenses and all the other ways we have of kind of packaging ourselves flow from who we are, how we understand ourselves to be. And in the process of counseling or psychotherapy is really tantamount to reading that, empathizing with it. In a way, it's figuring out how a client or patient makes sense. No matter how off-putting the presentation may be, no matter how different the presentation may be, no matter how floridly psychotic a patient might be, no matter how different their cultural presentation might be, there's a way to make sense of it. And sometimes just that act of treating people as if they've made sense and trying to connect empathically with how it does make sense is really heart and soul of, I think, what counseling and psychotherapy are. Again, having real-world experiences like visiting other cultures and seeing the world, I think sets you up for that and makes it easier to do, just because there's a certain kind of posture you take to listening and respecting and And even being aware of who you are and what you bring to the table. So how much of this is you and how much of it isn't you. Having these broad life experiences only helps with that kind of work.
Yeah, it's so very true. Obviously, we all have these delineations, boundaries sort of within where we work and identify ourselves. And I remember James Hillman saying something about how the most creative insights come at those kind of borderlines where we're willing to push ourselves. Of course, he's not the only one to think that. That's something that I think many psychologists probably can relate to. Well, Matthew, thank you. This has been so absolutely fascinating, and I really want to encourage people to look into Matthew's work. I've been talking with Matthew Bennett, who is a psychologist and a lecturer and administrator and also teaches in the counseling program at Pacifica Graduate Institute. Matthew, tell us where we can find a little bit more about your work.
Well, I do lecture locally and in Southern California, especially on psychoanalytic psychotherapy and therapeutic assessment, and especially on kind of character pathology and personality disorder through continuing education seminars and other presentations. And if you're interested, I have a website, aeoliancenter.org. That's A-E-O-L-I-A-N, aeoliancenter.org. And check us out, some of the lectures and presentations we offer, and also some writings and perspectives that might help your listeners approach depth psychology and how it manifests in clinical work out there in the world.
That's great. And then, of course, I also just want to mention that the Peace Corps and Pacifica Graduate Institute have come together to offer some scholarship opportunities, which is a really exciting piece of news just coming out of Pacifica right now. And that program is going to provide graduate school scholarships to return Peace Corps volunteers who complete a degree-related internship, primarily in an underserved American community while they pursue their studies. And I know that the Peace Corps and Pacifica both are very excited about this arrangement. And I think the hope really, in the spirit of depth psychology, which is so profoundly important in this whole idea of perspective and other, is that the returning Peace Corps members' international experience, as we have discussed today, Matthew, will help them to transpose their knowledge and to meet the needs of those underserved communities back here in the U.S.
Yes.
So very exciting.
It's a great way for Peace Corps volunteers to come home and continue the work in their home country. And I think that's what also helped them with that difficult transition back to American life, is to keep up the work and keep serving the community. I hope people will look into it.
I agree, absolutely. And you can learn more on Pacifica's website at pacifica.edu. And just a reminder, Matthew will be presenting Artifice of Eternity, Aging in Long-Term Care, where he will focus on the spiritual dimensions of the aging process. And that takes place July 16th and 17th at Pacifica Graduate Institute in Santa Barbara. I've been speaking today with Dr. Matthew Bennett. Matthew, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Bonnie.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright.